There had been abuse in my family, but it was mostly musical in nature.
Are you ready to get your world rocked?
Ready!
Are you ready to get your mind blown?
Do it!
1, 2, 3, 4!
Born in the dance halls of 1950s Jamaica, ska continues to be revived and reinvented across the globe. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. We'll present a genre dissection of all three waves of ska. Plus, we'll review the debut album from Chance the Rapper's collaborator, Jamila Woods. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions. This is Sound Opinions, and Greg, from time to time, we like to do what we call a genre dissection, digging deep into a sound that people may think they know, but maybe they don't know the roots of it, or maybe people are getting exposed to it for the first time. I have long been wanting to do a show about ska, with its roots in Jamaica, what they call the first wave, an incredible, joyous, but also political music, second wave ska coming up in the punk years, third wave ska, sort of revival and explosion of popularity in the 90s. Three different stories, really, but one classic beat.
We've got just the people here to help us explain it, Jim. Two experts in ska, Chuck Wren, a longtime ska DJ and scholar and the founder of Jump Up Records, and Charlie Organier, a harmonica player who played on countless ska sessions in Jamaica in the 60s. Chuck, Charlie, welcome to Sound Opinions.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you very much.
Charlie, you were there from the very beginning of ska. I mean, pretty much any time you hear a harmonica on those early Jamaican recordings, I mean, it's you. Derek Morgan, Stranger Cole, Prince Buster, Bob Marley, Toots and the Maytals, Jimmy Cliff, you name it, you played with them. So, Charlie, can you define to us what makes ska ska?
The ska is that upbeat on the over the rhythm, you know, like it's one and, it's the and, you know, one and. And the drummer, actually, the drummer just plays it straight. One, two, one, two, that's basically it. So whatever the rhythm is, that upbeat over that and, that's what makes it ska.
Mm-hmm.
Just that upbeat, because the songs can be any song.
Right.
You know, it could be Abide With Me, Fall Down, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But as long as that beat is there, that upbeat, sure, that's what ska is. And so it can be up-tempo, it can be medium-tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And the name ska, where did that originate?
Theophilus Beckford, which was a popular pianist, Cluett Johnson, Rico Rodriguez, and people like those, they started playing a song called Easy Snapping.
Last night, Papa come in town, he stood across the door. Mama said, no, Papa, you're real gone clown.
Of course, most of the music that they played was of that same type of rhythm. And Cluett Johnson was a bass player. And he said, man, every day you come with this ska, ska, ska. And that's exactly where it started. The name,
uh-huh,
ska.
Meaning the guitar, ska, ska, ska.
Well, the,
ska.
The guitar and the piano and the horns.
Mm-hmm.
Because the saxophone and they all play that rhythm. The saxophone, the trumpets, and trombone, everybody playing the ska, but the lead player.
Charlie, tell us about the musical influences that went into creating ska. Now, there was Mento in the 50s, this acoustic Jamaican folk music, basically, that was the ground floor of ska music, pretty much the big precursor to ska, right?
Like you said, the Mento music is the very beginning of Jamaican music.
Everybody looking, see them all, they're searching.
That's all you can hear, but no one can tell where the watch was hiding.
And of course, Jamaica, New Orleans music were very popular in Jamaica. The DJs would be playing a lot of that type of music. So we were also influenced by her.
You got early morning, don't come home till night. You got early morning, don't come home till night. Don't you know, little darling, they're
bad. Another influence we had was Cuba, because Cuban music, Cuba is just 90 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
So we're listening. We played in Jamaica, we played everybody's music. Jamaican's musicians were probably the most versatile musicians. I played in the hotels also, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I played Playboy and the Holiday Inn and all these different hotels.
Mm.
And there are folks coming from the States and they want to hear something done by Frank Sinatra. So you have to know all the Frank Sinatra
right.
songs.
Yep.
You know, they want to hear a Paracomo, some want to hear a little jazz.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because you're near me. Funny, but when you're near me, I'm in the mood for love.
So you find that there, these musicians were versatile to all those music.
You said that the sounds of New Orleans were coming to Jamaica. How were people on Jamaica hearing American music?
Well, the thing is, the DJs, they compete against each other. So they would collect records like, you know, you have Duke Reed, which is Treasure Island. You have Sir Coxon's Downbeat. As a matter of fact, you had thousands of these sound systems all over Jamaica.
Well, and tell us what a sound system is, because this is fascinating.
The sound system is actually DJs,
mm-hmm.
but you have these huge boxes. They call them House of Joy and big powerful amps.
Yeah,
and
often on the back of a pickup truck.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but in the dance halls, like Jubilee, and you have Forrester's Hall, you know, and big halls like that.
Mm.
So they would put their horns up like in a tree sometimes, and you could be 5 miles away, 10 miles away, and you hear them blasting, you know?
Charlie, you were the studio harmonica player for hundreds of sessions in Jamaica. Describe for us what it was like to be in the studio recording all those classic ska singles.
We had one studio that we were working from, and it's called Federal. It was a small studio, and everything that was recorded was live. Everything was recorded live.
Wow, one take, everybody in the
one
same
one take. You can, if you listen to the older recordings, you can hear the engineer saying red light, because when that red light comes on, that means you start.
Mm-hmm.
And always 9 o'clock in the morning, the session starts. Then from 9 to 5, then from there, another engineer starts, you know. And I was in all these sessions, so we were working from 9 o'clock till 3 a.m.
Wow.
Sometimes, yeah, and back in the studio the following day.
Would have been like New Orleans or you know, Stax or Motown, where there were house bands, and you would play on all the records by these artists. So they, one after another, they would be coming in and doing their a single, basically. Is that how it would work? You could see multiple artists in the same day?
Yeah, multiple artists, because we would do like 10 songs between 9 in the morning and 5 o'clock, we'd completely record like 10 or more songs. All these sessions, the singer run down a song once.
Mm-hmm.
You memorize the rhythm, and then the next thing the guy says, red light. And you record just like that.
Mm-hmm.
So solos is just, everything comes out naturally.
It sounds like a great gig.
Yeah, I was getting, what, £2 for each side I played on.
Hey,
all right. At that time, that was like a couple $100 today. Eventually, I mean, gradually then, Studio One, I think they were the next one opened, started their own studio, and then Treasure Isle. And then after that, studios just start coming up, like, you know, out of the walls and recording studios.
Right. Everywhere. And back of ice cream shops. Right?
Yeah.
Turn to Chuck Wren now. Chuck, as a scholar of ska and Jamaican music, a super fan, who would you say are the most important ska artists? Or rather, I guess we should start with the Skatalites, right? It all begins there.
Skatalites were basically the house band that created the ska sound and basically enabled many, many different vocalists, such as Ken Booth or Elton Ellis, to have a career in Jamaican music. These guys built the entire foundation. You know, the house was completely constructed on top of Skatalites' horn players and, you know, the vocalists they brought in and the rhythm section. They are the instrumental foundation, much in the way that people associate, you know, the house band at Motown creating the Motown sound.
One name that keeps coming up in that first wave of ska is Laurel Aitken. Some people have called him the godfather of ska.
He started with, you know, Jamaican rhythm and blues and boogie woogie and moved into ska in some ways as a later period music for him. I mean, he was definitely there at the ground floor at the, you know, late 50s, early 60s. Mm-hmm. He's got Mento recordings as well that are fantastic. And he was seamlessly able to move into ska music.
We want to be like Adam and Eve. Let us go in the garden, if you please. Put your arms around me and say that you need me only, and you'll be Eve. I'll be Adam.
Charlie Organier, you recorded with pretty much all of those artists, and you also played on the early recordings of the Jamaican artists who would become famous later on with the reggae scene in the 70s, Bob Marley, Jimmy Cliff, Toots and the Maytals. But, you know, it seems like there's so many other pioneers of that sound that are completely unknown today. Who are some of those forgotten artists who really invented ska?
When I started, we had people like Drumbago was a drummer, the saxophonist Ribs, you have one we call Campbell, always ska, the ska, and those are the horns that are playing. You know, you had different various drummers that played. Lester Sterling was from the beginning of it, you know. You have, there's so many that, and their names are not mentioned, you know. And part of it, I can't figure it out. There's like society type situation that goes with the Jamaica settings, you know. At that time, the music in Jamaica didn't get too much recognition. This music down there, like it's from the ghetto or something like that. And that's how they look at it at the time, you know. So people like Bob Marley, he gotten his recognition overseas. Not in Jamaica, not too much there, you know. So a lot of those musicians, I've never seen their names on anything. Richard Ace. You know, he played on all these Toots and the Maytals. He played on Earl Bob Marley and all that. Never seen his name.
And this is all still ska, before there was rocksteady or reggae.
No, well, you know, the same ska is called rocksteady. What okay. it is, what happened is that the pace, you know, I mean, a little, it slowed down a little.
Mm-hmm.
When you have people like John Holt, you know, started, and the Paragons,
yeah,
all that ease of going, you know, on the beach.
Let's go and have some fun.
What amazes me about the journey of learning about Jamaican music is how much it mirrored what was going on in the States. So mm-hmm. you talk about ska being New Orleans, jump blues, you know, shuffle blues, rhythm and blues. When that sound kind of shifted here in the States into more soul, vocal groups, that's what happened with rocksteady. You know, slow down. You had love songs, you know, which you kind of didn't really have as much in the ska era. And then if you think about what reggae, you know, morphed into from rocksteady, it's kind of that funk influence. You know, you got that even scratchier guitar. You know, you got that organ instead of the piano. You let the bassist go wild. You know, you got that one drop, you know, drumming style. You know, it's funk oriented.
No, the dancing was different also, you know, the ska, you know, crossing the arms and the legs and that type of stuff for the ska. Then when they call it rocksteady, then you move to the side and move to the right, to the left. And then the reggae now is lifting your feet real fast because the reggae started very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Today now everything is called reggae. It's just the same ska.
It's been a complete pleasure to speak with harmonica player Charlie Organair, talking about those legendary Jamaica studio sessions during the first wave of ska. Charlie, thanks so much for being our guest on Sound Opinions.
Nice being with you guys.
When we come back, we'll continue our genre dissection in the UK and America as we look at the second and third waves of ska with DJ Chuck Wren. And later, we're going to review the debut album from Chicago poet and soul singer Jamila Woods. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot. My partner is Jim DeRogatis. Today we're doing a genre dissection of ska, a style of dance music that was created in the 50s and 60s in Jamaica. Before the break, we talked about how in Jamaica, ska evolved into rocksteady and then into reggae. which became that 70s worldwide sound thanks to people like Bob Marley. But ska didn't disappear. It continued on elsewhere in the world. The so-called second wave of ska began in the UK in the 70s. We're joined by Chuck Wren, founder of Jump Up Records and an expert on the history of ska. Chuck, what was the second wave of ska?
Well, basically, lots of Jamaicans moved to Great Britain in search of work. So you had very large West Indian communities all across Britain. And they were bringing their music and their culture and their influences. And they were right alongside, you know, working class kids, white kids. A lot of these kids would take these influences and then, you know, shake it up in a cocktail with the music that they were growing up on, the punk movement. And, you know, they changed it around a bit. You know, obviously they kind of took the emphasis of the huge horn section. They kind of minimalized that. And they, you know, brought the guitar more up to the front that, you know, basically helped define the two-tone sound.
Now, Two Tone was a label.
Yes.
It was a movement. And it also really described the black and white coming together racial aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, the label that Jerry Dammers of the Specials started. And he created the name for all those things you said. You know, the racial unity of the bands, the racial message that all the bands were, you know, trying to convey in a time of, you know, deep, troubling times.
Well, because some white Brits were blaming the immigrants for, quote-unquote, taking their jobs.
Yeah. So, you know, they were putting on these shows with mixed crowds, mixed band members, you know, singing about racial unity, the black and white checkerboard, all pushed the envelope of, you know, black and white harmony.
Well, a lot of international hits out of that scene. What are the key records, key bands?
Well, I mean, obviously the first record from the Specials, the band that created the two-tone sound, the blueprint.
What year is that, Chuck?
That came out in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people say, well, that first Specials record was an homage in some ways to the originators. You know, there were a lot of covers, per se, on the first Specials record, but they made them so uniquely their own.
Curtain has fallen.
And then the records that followed, you know, by other bands were, you know, equally influential. That first Madness record, One Step Beyond, which came out the same year, 1979, I believe, they kind of took a little bit more of a pop, jovial songwriting style. You know, I guess the other record that we need to talk about is that very first English Beat record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or is known, as, you know, in England as just the Beat. You know, I Just Can't Stop It was just a wonderful mix of, you know, once again, they've got a couple Prince Buster covers on there, but you know, they've got just a wonderful mix of, you know, that kind of edgy, like I said, guitar oriented, modern punk infused ska, you know, in the mirror in the bathroom, sort of thing. When people define two-tone, they really only kind of add a couple more bands. You know,
yeah.
Like Bad Manners, The Selector, The Body Snatchers. You know, that's kind of where people bookend it, you know, on those handful of bands.
Is it new wave's popularity that kills off ska, or because two-tone doesn't carry far into the 80s?
No. I mean, I think, so I think it is safe to say that new wave accidentally put the, you know, the end to two-tone. Just what happens.
And then they have a transition into what became the third wave. There were, I think what we saw was an American adaptation of what was happening in two-tone. You saw bands like Fishbone and Operation Ivy incorporating some of these rhythms into the punk and post-punk scenes.
Yes. Specifically, you know, kind of skater culture, the way I looked at it. Mm. Those bands truly influenced everything that happened in the third wave.
Well, I think Operation Ivy stands in a league of its own. I mean, they get a tremendous amount of respect, and like Greg said, Fishbone, Op Ivy were the bridge bands. If we put a date on what's actually called third wave, and you could sense, just like the major labels descended on Seattle and said, we're going to sign us some grunge bands. We're signing every grunge band. You know, that's what happened with third wave ska.
Yes.
Roundabout.
I feel like it was somewhere around 1993, because that's when we saw a lot of the bands around us sort of getting real attention, and it was not surprising that it would just be a few years later that a couple of them would break onto the radio. Would I have ever guessed that it would be Rancid, you know, breaking ska on the radio with Time Bomb? I could have never predicted that.
If you want to make a move, then you better come in. It's just ability, that reason that we're so thin. Living and dying and the stories that are true. Sink into a collapse, knowing when you're through. Black or white shoes, black hair, Cadillac.
In fact, that song itself paved the way for everything that came afterward, you know. And I still to this day remember hearing it on the radio and just saying to myself, here it comes.
Greg, Greg and I have been fighting about third wave ska for a long time. You know, I can't defend Rancid, okay? But like, Save Ferris with that cover of Come On, Eileen.
Yeah.
I love that.
People do love that.
I love the Mighty Mighty Bosstones.
Bosstones are a great band.
Who were the Bosstones?
Bosstones, basically a bunch of hardcore kids.
Yeah.
You know, in Boston, grew up on, you know, bands like Slapshot and everything that came out on Tang. And they were big two-tone fans as well. And they just mixed it into this amazing sound.
A metal guitar.
Yes.
You know, but ska rhythms.
Yes.
And then Dickey, the lead singer.
Yeah, this gruff voice. You know, it was, there was nothing else like it, you know.
Nothing like singing Caribbean music in a thick Boston accent.
How about this,
this
guy, though, was a character, Greg.
I'm not a coward, I've just never been tested. I'd like to think that if I was, I would pass. Look at the tested and think there before the grace go on. Might be a coward, I'm afraid of what I might find out.
I love the Bosstones.
And to me, it's interesting.
See, you're wrong, Greg.
You go from Jamaican ska, you know, the core of the genre in the 60s, and then you flip over to England, and it was this biracial thing, the two-tone thing. Then you get to the 90s, and it's very much, you know, a coastal white suburban
yeah.
thing. So the rhythm is in being incorporated into it, but you're commenting on the fact that there was this guitar-based, you know, in-your-face kind of attitude. And you'd mentioned the label, I think, was very important at part of that Tang label. Explain a little bit more about that.
Well, I mean, Tang put out those first few Bosstones records, and indirectly they made ska acceptable for punk kids. Whether they knew they were doing it or not, that definitely helped. All of a sudden, you had that punk infusion of fans saying, hey, this ska thing's all right. And yeah, they did want to hear kind of that faster, harder, whether it's hardcore punk or metal influence, they wanted that sound. Wanted something that would fit on a huge bill as the Warped Tour came through.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that you was American ska in the 90s. Mm,
take my skateboard,
right?
Go to Warped, and,
there you
and
go.
See me some
right?
ska. The name we haven't mentioned, No Doubt.
No matter what people say about No Doubt being, you know, a very big pop sensation that only loosely used ska in their mix, they were ska kids. I mean, they were putting out 45s at the very beginning of the 90s, just straight up ska records, you know.
Yeah, but it's like there's two different No Doubts.
That's exactly it.
There's the pre-stardom No Doubt, right. And then the Gwen Stefani
absolutely.
You know, backing band.
And I think No Doubt just sort of did what was kind of part of their natural, you know, progression was, you know, well, we're kind of a poppy new wave band that incorporates some punk, some reggae, some ska. And then, you know, Gwen kind of went on her, you know, well, I'm influenced by dancehall, and that kind of started her solo career.
So it's not unlike second wave ska, peters out into new wave, a poppier, more commercial sound, less ska influence. Third wave peters out in the U.S.?
Yeah, it does, and it does fast.
When?
Well, 98 was kind of the peak, and then all of a sudden, by 99, you saw the bands that were big ska bands put out their non-ska albums. Yeah.
There's more to us.
Right,
yes.
Exactly. The uncomfortable non-ska album. And then by 2000, you did kind of feel that, you know, the house had completely collapsed.
It was done. Yeah.
It was done. And I think that happened because it just grew so fast in such a short amount of time.
But we're talking really about the commercial
not
lasting, because ska's alive and well. You're promoting shows here in Chicago, big festivals in Chicago, and these festivals happen around the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what I love to do with Jump Up is put out records from bands all across the world. So I have a band from Seoul, South Korea right now on the label. I actually put out a Mento band from the Philippines.
That's great.
Sung in their native tongue. All these bands are playing huge festivals, whether it's Denmark or Seoul, South Korea or Japan. And, yeah, it's happening everywhere. It never stopped. But now, you know, you really see that the true fans have kind of all banded together and really kept it alive. So when people talk about, well, is there a fourth wave on the way? I said, we don't need one.
You don't need a wave. We have an ocean of
right,
ska.
Right, we're here. You know, we're living it every day. It's healthy everywhere you go.
Chuck Wren has been our guest on Sound Opinions. Thanks, Chuck, for coming in.
Oh, it's been a blast.
That wraps up our ska genre dissection, but we want to hear from you. What's your favorite era of ska? Are you eagerly awaiting the fourth wave? Give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800. When we come back, we'll review the new record from soul singer and Chance the Rapper collaborator, Jamila Woods. Plus, I'll drop a quarter into the Desert Island Jukebox. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Ain't nobody checking for us.
Whoa,
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis. You're listening to a little bit of Jamila Woods with a track called Black Girl Soldier from her first solo album, Heaven. Jamila Woods is a multifaceted artist out of Chicago, big part of the spoken word scene in the city, the poetry slam scene. She also has been working in the music world. She put out a couple of duo records a few years ago and has made a name for herself in recent years doing cameos on various records. She appeared on that Macklemore and Ryan Lewis track, White Privilege 2. She was a big part of that Sunday Candy hit for Chance the Rapper on the Surf album, Donnie Trumpet's Surf album last year. And she also appeared on Blessings from the new Chance the Rapper record. So she has made quite a name for herself as a guest vocalist on these recordings. This is her first solo record. It's called Heaven. Here's a track from it. Then we're going to review it. It's called Very Black from Jamila Woods on Sound Opinions.
Black is like the magic. The magic's like a spell. Brothers went to heaven, the police going to, yeah, they're going to. Hello, operator, emergency hotline. If I say that I can't breathe, will I become a jawline? Up to see the movie, line up to see the act. The officers are scheming to cover up their cover up their. Ask me no more questions. Me no more lies. You're serving and protecting and stealing babies' lives. I'm very black, black, black. Kissing me back, back, back. You take my brother, brother, brother. I fight back, back, back. I'm very black, black, black. I made a back, back, back. You take my brother, brother, brother. I fight back, back, back.
Everything is everything. Mantra says guillotine. A missionary commission misery into angel wings. And all he wanna do is be still and cut bread. Never know the dead how they whisper, forgive me. Everything is relative. Politicize the evidence. I heard a politician reiterate all the messages. And all he wanna do is feed family, be famous. Never know the poor how they scream out, redeem me. Everything is casualty. A song I heard the bullets sing. I know a couple babies gon' see him fly tonight. He wish he wasn't magic. All he wanna do is be a passage in the book titled America the Savage. Symphony and symphony, when everything was meant to be. Piano manager, my boy just invented the song for me. And all I wanna do is find love and be happy. And all I wanna do is find love.
I'm very black.
That is Very Black by Jamila Woods, her first album, Heaven. And Greg, it is an incredible record, exceedingly powerful, very much part of the Chicago tradition, I think, of soul and hip-hop. What has distinguished Chicago hip-hop in particular from Common to Chance the Rapper with Kanye in between? It has been talking about the real lives of the African-American community in this city, not glorifying the gangsta mythology, talking about very real issues of community. Jamila here dropping bits of holy scripture, church songs.
My cup is full up, what I got is enough. Nobody completes me, don't mess with my stuff. My cup is full up, what I got is enough.
Playground games, chants the kids would play, you know, in kindergarten, protest rhymes. We have her quoting Losing My Religion by R.E.M. at one point, and also dropping a little Paula Cole on us. Now, her championing in particular the black woman's experience. Man, in that song, Black Girl Soldier, you know, she's name dropping Rosa Parks and Ella Baker and Angela Davis. Call it black girl magic. Yes, yeah, she scares the government. Deja vu of Tubman. That's Harriet Tubman. There is no more powerful political figure, I think, in America, both underrated and yet their voices are so important than the African-American woman. And wow, musically incorporating Donnie Trumpet, who's also a Chance collaborator, and some jazz and some soul and hip-hop. Chance the Rapper stops by to return the favor.
This here ain't for no vice doc. This here ain't for no spike op. But since I was one like a cyclops, I run up some stairs on a bike cop. I shake up some hands on the right block. Block club president, night watch.
To me, it's like the next step beyond, you know, taking neo soul into a new place that is streetwise, but also funny, humane, and poignant. This is a buy it record for sure.
Well, this record blows me away too, Jim. I can't see this record not being regarded as one of the signature records of what has been a great wave of soul and hip-hop out of Chicago the last few years. What I love about her voice, it's not a big voice. There's a light touch to her tone, and I think it's a perfect tone for blurring the lines between the political and the personal in this record.
Black girl be in a bubble, floating quietly out of trouble, They call you shy, always ask why you listen before you speak.
Never comes across as preachy or self-pitying, even though it is very political in almost every track. You know, when she looks in the mirror as a young African-American, you know, looking back on her younger self and doesn't like her features, you know, because she's been taught by society that as a black woman, somehow she is inferior. She's fighting back against that. When as an adult, she sees the idea that, okay, we've been talking about equality for how many years now? My grandmother and my great-grandmother have been telling me about this, and they're still, you know, we've barely moved the dial in the direction we want to move to, and the sense of hopelessness that you can face there. And at the same time, rising above that, like, I will not be defeated. She is basically encompassing all these different styles of music, you know, bringing in jazz, bringing in hip-hop, bringing in the soul influence. And I think the fact that when you listen to this record from a distance, it almost feels playful, like a children's record. There's almost like a sing-songy quality about some of this music here. But then when you zero in closer, you realize, wow, these are some heavy subjects here that she's addressing. I love that juxtaposition of the light and the dark. It is a buy it record all the way.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
Stranded, I'm so far from home. Stranded, yeah, I'm on my own. Stranded, you gotta leave me alone, cause I'm stranded on my own.
As often as possible on Sound Opinions, we like to take a trip to the desert island and play a track we cannot live without. Jim, the Desert Island Jukebox is all yours today. What's it going to be?
Greg, we recently had Bob Mould as a guest on the show. He's been on the show several times. That always gets me thinking about that incredibly fertile period in indie rock in the early and mid-80s. And also, there's been a lot of talk lately, thanks in part to John Doe's book, about the early L.A. punk scene, what was going on there. I'm going to play a track by Jeffrey Lee Pierce. He was the driving force in this band, The Gun Club, formed in L.A., sort of a psychobilly, cowpunk, post-punk, tribal psychobilly blues is a phrase that they like to use. This weird band that didn't fit in any notch in the 80s coming out of Los Angeles. Jeffrey Lee Pierce originally was the president of the Blondie fan club in Los Angeles, who later winds up signed to an indie label that Chris Stein of Blondie did. But when they debuted, they were on a subsidiary of Slash Records, the great Slash Records. They were peers of bands like X and the Flesh Eaters and the Blasters, doing something that had like this voodoo vibe and this horror comics thing and blues, but blues the way the Cramps warped them. And then the country and the just they didn't fit anywhere. I think I saw the Gun Club 7 times in like a month and a half at one period in the mid-80s. They were stuck on the East Coast. I'm going to shows all the time in New York and New Jersey. He was scary on stage. There was this dark, sinister vibe, an American Nick Cave. Think of it that way. Both with the ominous vibe, but also the literary ambition. No less
and authority than Jack White of the White Stripes has said of the song I'm about to play, they ought to teach this song in school. This is a track called She's Like Heroin to Me. I think Jeffrey Lee Pierce knew a lot about obsession with women and obsession with drugs. Sadly, he died in 1996 after a brain hemorrhage, well before his time. A real tragic piece of L.A. rock history. But this is when they were just starting out. That first album was called Fire of Love. This is a signature track along with a tune called Sex Beat. Those are the two big gun club songs about obsession, about addiction, about just sex and violence and drugs. I mean, what else do you need in rock and roll, right? She's Like Heroin to Me by Jeffrey Lee Pierce and the Gun Club on Sound Opinions. That's the Gun Club with She's Like Heroin to Me, my Desert Island Jukebox pick for the week. Greg, what do you have on the show next week?
Jim, next week, a live performance and interview with a rocker who made one of last year's best albums, Courtney Barnett.
Sound Opinions was produced by Brendan Banizak, Evan Chung, Alex Claiborne, and our intern, Daphne McLean.
Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
New messages.
Hi, guys. This is Matt from Chicago. I just listened to your Alan Vega tribute, and I think it's worth mentioning that before Bruce Springsteen started covering Dream Baby Dream in his live shows, he met Alan Vega in the studio, I think in the 80s, and I think you can really hear some influence on the Nebraska album.
License registration, I ain't got none, but I got a clear conscience about the things that I've done.
it a lot in the minimalist production and the use of echo on his voice. That's all. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hey, Jim and Greg. This is Rob from Munster, Indiana. You did a pretty good show on the post-rock thing. At first, I encountered Tortoise DJing at WNUR in 1994 through the two 7-inches that they released and the first album, Tortoise. And that first album pretty much changed my life. One band you left out that you should have mentioned was Explosions in the Sky. Bye.
My name is Marianne Mata, and I'm located in New York. I didn't like this kind of music that's on the radio because I'm supposed to be old enough to be a grandma, but I have no grandchildren. But I find it fascinating and interesting, and the music is entertaining, and it's different, and it's weird, but I like it. Thanks. Bye.
This is Walt from Chicago. You know, this Tortoise stuff, it's just horribly boring. Well, these new top 40 bands, you know, songs on the radio, you know, they're bands, actually. They're writing their songs. Like, even, like the dude that the band called Dance, DMCE or whatever. You know, Take by the Ocean and stuff like that. Those are fun, new, lively sounds. You really should check out some new things. Talk to me, baby. I'm rolling up on this sweet, sweet, baby.
No more messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.